Welcome to the Before Midnight podcast, coming to you from the N Plus One studios overlooking beautiful downtown Frankfurt. In this podcast, we explore the world of age group triathletes. We'll be looking at the real world challenges of being an amateur multi-sport athlete. I am your host, Linda Word, along with my co-host, Brian Schenkenfelder. What's up today, Brian? Happy St. Patrick's Day. I guess that's today.
Yeah.
Did you wear green?
I'm not Irish.
Well, neither am I, but you know. I wore green socks.
I'm a sacrilege. I don't really care.
You know, when you work in a school, you have to care. Otherwise, and you don't, so you don't have to worry.
That's right. I work at home. I don't have to deal with the other people who are like, why aren't you wearing green today? I'm like, because I'm not Irish.
I open up the car doors this morning. I'm taking everybody's temperatures. Happy St. Patrick's Day. And I had at least five parents go, uh-oh. I forgot. Uh-oh. It's like, that's okay. We have green stickers we can put on your kids.
So they have something green. Yeah.
So they have something green and their friends won't pinch them. It's pretty funny. They were like, I had a lot of uh-ohs. It's like, yeah, it's okay. We got you covered. We got you covered. So what else is going on?
Let's see. We're continuing on in soccer. We did pick up soccer over the weekend. That was good. These kids are, they've got their skills and it's going to be a fun season this year. They're starting to understand the game, and that's where it gets exciting. The other night we went to, I guess Georgetown is trying to come into Frankfurt and start a soccer league here in Frankfurt under their umbrella.
Okay.
We went to they had like a kind of a practice type thing where the kids could kind of see what the coaching's like. Mm-hmm. It was mainly so that they could talk to parents and try to
recruit
parents. So that was the whole thing. It was interesting though. Watching them kind of do this semi-practice, because it really wasn't very good practice. And the one thing that always drives me nuts, and I've seen this a number of times, is they'll bring the kids together at the beginning and stretch for like 3 or 4 minutes. I'm like, why are you stretching?
Oh my God.
That is so like 1980s way of starting a practice with stretching. You do some dynamic warm-ups. If you want to stretch, right. You stretch at the end of practice when your muscles are warm, not when they're cool.
Right.
When they're cool, you end up damaging
the
them.
Kids.
They end up not performing as well as they would have if you had stretch. That one drives me nuts. That's one that kind of like, I don't know if I would want you to coach my kids if this is what you're going to do.
Yeah. I mean, the kids get there and they're excited. They want to move anyway, so it's a perfect opportunity to do dynamic warm-ups.
It was okay. They did some skill stuff. Mostly it was kind of like a glorified big field scrimmage, and they kind of coached a little bit. It was okay. I wasn't super impressed. It was nothing exciting. I come from this background of like where I coach, and then I follow collegiate coaching.
Mm-hmm.
In college, you have a limited number of hours to work with kids each week, much like you have with kids in soccer. You're not going to have 5 practices, 2 hours
These
a day
are not
a week.
Professional
It's just not.
Athletes.
You're not a professional athlete. When you look at like collegiate practices for a sport like football, they're scheduled, every minute of the practice is scheduled well in advance to maximize reps, touches, everything.
Right.
As many people can go through them as possible in that hour and a half or 2 hour practice period you have.
Okay.
When I look at youth soccer and practice needs to be that way. Everything needs to have a purpose, and it needs to get people touching the soccer ball and doing all that as much as possible. Because there's a lot of standing around when you play full field soccer.
Right.
One soccer ball, 15, 20 kids, there's only so many touches that can go around.
Right.
And that bothered me a little bit. But again, I don't think the purpose was practice. I think the purpose was to recruit parents. And that's okay. I totally understand what they're going for.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see what happens in Frankfurt. Our YMCA activities person, I don't know if you heard this.
Yeah, he's gone.
Yeah, he resigned.
I'm curious to see. I assume we're going to continue to play soccer.
I assume so. I assume somebody will.
We're supposed to start practice in like a week.
I mean, he's still there for another week, so.
Another couple weeks. At least
I mean, he gave, you know, I mean, he gave at least 2 weeks notice. It'd be nice if he gave a month, but he's going to another job, so it depends on how soon they want him.
Yeah.
As to how soon he's going to leave.
Not that I really am worried about it outside of, as long as the league runs, I don't.
Yeah, yeah.
He wasn't the best of
Well, he got kind of dumped with it. He got dumped with everything with COVID because they let so many people go.
Right.
So he ended
Well, he was the guy before, and then they brought a girl in to run at least the youth sports.
Okay.
And she was really good.
Okay.
And then she got sucked up by Lexington because she was good. The Lexington Y. They brought her in to lead bigger, better things.
Okay.
And he ended up coming back to it. We were kind of...
Yeah, well,
he either has too much on his plate or he's just not great at that role.
Well, I think he ran everything. I mean, he was, you know, he was my boss. I mean, I never have anything to do with the youth leagues, but he was in charge of all the group fitness classes, all the scheduling, all the employees and stuff. So, yeah, it was something else on his plate that he wasn't, you know, doesn't surprise me that he didn't excel at it.
Yeah.
I mean, he did a great job as my boss, thank goodness. Yeah, we'll have to see what happens.
But he was, the biggest problem was he wouldn't provide any communication. No one knew that there was a soccer league even going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, well, this is usually when we have soccer. Someone finds out, actually one of the kids found out about it, and then they called, I texted my wife, are we into the soccer team this year?
Like, well, is there soccer? That, yes. Not to get too much into this in the podcast, but we are, since we're under Lexington now, everything has to go through them.
Yes.
And so it wasn't actually him, it was Lexington. They're the ones that decide what we do and what community, and they always publicize everything that happens in Lexington. They forget to tell anybody about what's going on in Frankfort.
Well, then it's like there's just stuff like who's on the teams, and trying to get that information from him has been challenging at best.
Yeah,
but that's beside the point.
As
long as we play, I'll be happy. Yep. The other interesting thing that happened over the weekend was we watched a movie called Yes Day.
Yes
on Netflix.
Day?
Yes Day.
Okay, I haven't seen that one.
There was a meme that went around on YouTube about a year or two ago about you can't say no to somebody. And they would do it with the spouses. Like, I remember Preston Plays did it with his wife and his brother. Like, I can't say no for an entire day. I have to say yes to everything. And they would do things like go out and buy, like, all these PlayStations and stuff like that. And he had to say yes to buying it for them. And it was a movie about parents who couldn't say no to their kids for an entire day.
I know those children. They're nightmares.
It was an interesting concept for a movie. They had rules like you can't spend X amount of dollars, you can't do anything illegal, but we have to say yes for the entire day. Of course, there was morals and stuff like that. It was just such a weird concept of a yes day. You have to say yes to your kids for everything they say for an entire day.
That could backfire on some kids. I can see that. I'll have to look that one up. Did you watch it with Alex?
Yeah, we watched it. It's a PG movie. It was fine. It was okay. There was nothing untoward in it.
Okay.
It's not like it was an adult one.
Yeah.
A spousal yes day.
Whew. Mm, that could be interesting.
Yeah, Jenny was like, that's a hard no.
You know your wife well. No. So did you get any training in with all of this week?
Yeah, the weather's getting warmer. I've actually gotten out and kind of biked a couple times. It felt good to be outside on the road.
I'm like ready to take my bike off the trainer.
Cause
I'm like,
okay, the trainer.
The weather's nice enough now. I'm like, okay, I just need to get this off here because I can't deal.
I just don't deal with the trainer at all. I gave up on the trainer a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it's been at least 3 weeks since I've been on mine.
That might have been a couple months. It's the last time I've been on mine. I don't know. I used to get on it occasionally when I was watching Netflix.
Yeah.
For an hour. The problem with the rollers is I don't go nearly hard enough on it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't burn any calories, which has led to my stagnation and weight loss. I'm back to where I started about 2 months ago now.
Oh, man.
Nothing over the last 2 or 3 months. Which just means it's a disaster for like trying to reach like that goal weight. It's always stupid to try to push weight loss in January and February. I don't get enough exercise, and I just, M&Ms are just too tasty.
Well, and you've got like all the leftover stuff from the holidays, and then you've got Valentine's Day. There's a lot around.
There's just a lot. I have a hard time saying no to sweets at times. That is a relatively newer problem in my life. I didn't have that problem throughout my 20s and 30s. It was after I married my wife. She's got a sweet tooth, so which has led to me having a sweet tooth. Well, as a kid, my parents always had candy and snacks available. It was not like some special thing to get it. Right, there wasn't this forbidden thing, special thing. It was like all the kids would come over to my house and be like, oh, look at all this stuff. Ah!
Yeah, yeah.
But it wasn't. It was just a normal thing. When I got older, it just carried on. I was like, I don't really need this. It's just not anything special. And I never really ate a ton of that stuff in my 20s and 30s. It wasn't until my wife would buy cookies and stuff, and then I'd be like, oh, cookie. I need something to snack on. These cookies look good.
And you can burn off 5 of those when you're much younger.
Yeah, I train. And in the summer, it's not a big deal because you're biking and you're burning 600, 700, 800 calories a bike ride rather than 100 calories I'm burning on a trainer.
Yeah. No, I get you.
It becomes a challenge for me. I just am miserable in January, that winter time where I just can't get out and exercise enough to overcome my weaknesses when it comes to the lesser quality foods.
Well, it's funny because my husband's out of town and he's the one that cooks. But, you know, I always, you know, tend to, we eat fairly differently and we eat kind of separately just because of schedules and stuff. Without him here, I've lost about 1.5 pounds, almost 2 pounds since he's been gone. Just because, I mean, he just, you know, he cooks a lot of meat. There's a lot of potatoes. There's always a lot of pasta. And I just don't eat. Like, he'll cook a huge pot of chicken Alfredo that'll last, you know, the three of us a week.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that's right there. It's really easy to eat. It's really not, I mean, it's full of calories. And like I said, you know, I'm just not exercising as much. So since he's been out of town, it's like, okay. My house is clean because there's nobody there to mess it up, and I've lost weight.
Well, I do want to say it's not my wife's fault that I eat that stuff. It's my fault for eating it.
Yes, you're the one.
It's just a lot more available, and that makes it challenging.
She's not serving it on a plate and handing it to you.
The difference was is when I was single and kind of by myself, is I just wouldn't buy that stuff.
Yeah.
It just never occurred to me to really buy all that stuff.
Yeah, I understand. I buy very select stuff. It's like, okay, I can handle having this much, but that's about it.
So how's your training going? Mine's been, like I said, I'm getting outside. That makes me happy on the bike.
I'm ready for a recovery week. I did a lot. The weather was good last week, so that meant I did a lot. And then Sunday, I actually did a 1 mile test set, which I haven't done in like 3 years. And I was really, really pleased, though, because I was like 3 seconds faster than I was the last time. Or 3 seconds slower, excuse me, than I was the last time. So that was kind of, I was really pretty proud of that. I was like, all right, don't stink as much as I thought I did. And now I have a goal, too, because I did sign up for Nationals. And I know they sent that invitation to, like, everybody under the sun. But I was like, you know what? I want to go. I need a vacation.
Sent to anybody. I mean, you had to qualify at some point. Well, basically, if you qualified 2 years ago.
There was a lot of conversation on Facebook. I got it, too. And I haven't raced since, you know, since 2019 or 2018. I was like, well, I know, you know, if you qualified in 2019, you got to go this year because there wasn't opportunity for people to race last year. I did race a couple times, but, you know, I know my qualification's good and that I actually earned it, but it's kind of disheartening to see all these other people. Oh, I'm scared of everybody. It's like,
they may have sent it to everybody, but I tend to doubt it. Usually you have to have qualified. Maybe they may have sent it to people who qualified in the last 3 years or something like that in a race.
Which I don't know why they would do that. Should it
have been, I'm guessing they're probably worried about filling it up.
I don't know. Well, I guess they say every year, you know, enter early because it's going to sell out.
They do.
And I imagine this year it probably would sell out just because it is 2 years worth of people.
A lot of it depends on how many entries they're going to allow.
Yeah, that too. They don't say. They just say because sell out.
I don't know if they have a cap on most years.
How many people were there when we went to Cleveland that year?
Oh, there had to be 2,000 plus.
Yeah.
It was huge. I mean, I've never seen a transition area that big in my entire life.
They've got to cap it at some point because a transition area can't hold 5,000 bikes. I mean,
I imagine, but they probably cap it at like 2,500.
Okay.
My guess is if you wait till the last minute, you probably aren't going to get in.
Yeah.
You know, if you register a month or two in advance, you can probably get in. I can't imagine that they sell out very often because they just, that's a too big of a moneymaker for them to just turn people away.
Especially since they lost all the money last year. So.
Well, I mean, in Cleveland, I mean, they could have had a much bigger transition area if they really wanted to. That field was huge they put us in.
There wasn't a whole lot more room.
Yeah, there was. All those cars were parked. They could have made all of that transition if they'd wanted to.
I guess, and where the tents were and stuff, they could have pushed it that way.
Oh, yeah, they could have done a lot of things. They could put as many people as they want out. That transition area was crazy. It was at least 150, 200 yards long.
It was something to see.
Because I remember grabbing my bike and running for like 15 minutes to get out of the transition area.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a hike, wasn't it?
I was right at that one end where you came in from the swim, right. So I had to run with my bike over to get on it.
You were at the end though, so you could kind of go around. I was like snap dab in the middle. So, which wasn't bad, but it was like, okay, how am I going to find my bike? I'm like, okay, okay,
5,000, 3,000 bikes.
How many? Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was tricky. But, yeah, I'm excited. I've never been to Milwaukee. I've got a friend that's. I was like, you want to go to Milwaukee? She's like, I'll drive. She's got an Explorer, so it'll fit the bike and all that stuff. So.
And I know they're going to run that with all the COVID protocol too, which doesn't interest me personally. Yeah. It's not going to be much of a post-race. It's going to be buy, leave, get out of here.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, I'm all right with it. You know, we'll leave here Thursday. And I was thinking it was a longer drive, but it's only like 7.5 hours.
Yeah, that's not that bad.
So I was like kind of looking at all the pros and cons, and I was like, oh, it's that close? Yeah.
You know, I might go next year. Next year, I enter a different age group.
Are they, well, would next year still be in Milwaukee?
Probably.
I didn't know if they would switch it if they have a contract years ahead of time.
They were in Cleveland 3 years.
Oh, did they? I thought they just did two. I thought it was every 2 years.
Yeah, maybe it was two, but they missed a year, so I assume that they'll. Okay. They ran it in Milwaukee for years before they moved to a couple other places.
Okay. Because I was looking at, like, well, you know, knowing my luck, they'll move it to California or something next year. And I won't
They
go.
Generally try to keep it in the central part of the U.S.
Okay.
To keep people from to go. If the problem with they've had it out west a few times. The problem if you have it out west, no one from the East Coast goes.
Right.
And there's a hell of a lot more people on the East Coast than there are on the West Coast.
Okay. I didn't know. You know, it's like, do they move it to Florida, which I would go, or Arizona? That's a little too far.
Yeah.
You know, just thinking of the big triathlon areas that they would potentially have it. So.
But since it's the USA, they generally try to have it fairly close to that central Midwest. Mm-hmm. Area closer to the population basis, which is why they've had Milwaukee. That was where it was before. They had it in Oklahoma 1 year. Remember that?
Okay, that's not too far for here.
No, yeah, they generally try to. I think they try to keep it like the juniors has been in Ohio for the last 8 or 9 years.
Okay,
the junior championships.
I wasn't sure how it worked. I'm still relatively new to all this, but I'm excited. I'm going. That's my summer vacation.
There you go.
To go to Milwaukee. I know your wife wants to go because she's like, they have beer.
They do have beer. They had that's where they had the giant beer festival right. We went to that 1 year. We had to get.
She's going to try and talk you into going just so that she can go have beer. She's not there. They are.
But yeah, they had the giant beer festival. That was wild. They give you a shot glass, and there were 200 beer companies there.
Oh, wow.
And each tent would have 5 or 6 different potential beers there you could try.
Wow.
I think I had 20. I think we got to 20. And then, four ounces. That's a lot of beer.
That's a lot of beer. Doesn't seem like it when you first start out, but.
Oh, that's crazy. You had people passed out on the ground halfway through the day. I mean, we weren't even there the whole time they were open, I don't think. We were only there like maybe 2/3 of the time they were.
Wow.
And there's like gazillions of people there.
Well,
that was
I'm not going for the beer fest, but I might have a beer for sure.
That was a different life.
Yeah. BC, before children, as I say.
Yeah, that was way before children. WBC. One of the things I wanted to talk about today came about from the videos we were looking to shoot on mm-hmm. tips for triathletes to get going. One of the ones we were looking at was inflating a tire.
Right.
When I was kind of putting together what I wanted to do, inflating a tire video, it became obvious that I would have to talk about the Presta and Schrader valves, the two valve types you find on bicycles.
Which I can never remember which is which. Ever.
And I thought this would be a good topic for the podcast to explain the differences between the Schrader and Presta and kind of why we have the two different styles mm-hmm. of valves for tubes.
It's a very good question because it's
very annoying.
Most people
don't know, actually. The Presta valve comes before the S Schrader, so it's the smaller of the two.
Ah.
It's a good way to think of it.
Okay.
The Presta is the little tiny one.
You also have to press.
And you can also press on the top.
That's how I'll remember. Thank you.
The Presta valve is a small one with a little screw cap that most of your expensive road bikes have that valve type.
Okay.
The cheaper bikes and mountain bikes are the ones that are going to have the Schrader. The Schrader is the valve you find on every car and motorcycle tire known to man, just about.
Yep.
The more common valve type. Now, the question always arises, why do these bikes have the Presta valve? Especially people that are new to cycling.
Mm-hmm.
They get a bike, it has this Presta valve, and they're like, what do I do with this? It doesn't work with my pump.
Right. How many times have you heard that?
that actually does come up somewhat frequently. When you buy a bike, you're probably going to end up buying a pump with if you're getting into road biking and triathlon, you're going to end up buying a pump that is a Presta and Schrader, a dual valve type pump system.
You'd be surprised how many people I know who do not have.
They don't. And the other problem people run into is most of the pumps that they own are just pumps that pump things up. They don't have a pressure gauge, mm-hmm. which is a real problem when you start talking about bikes where you need to have a tube within a range of pressure. Without a valve thing, it's kind of hard to tell how much pressure you have in the tube. If you have too little pressure, if you have too much pressure, it can pop and blow, and that's bad if you hit like a big bump. But the worst problem is underinflating, because that can lead to pinch flats, mm-hmm. and you're much more likely to pinch flat than from overinflation.
So how do you? So is there a way to tell if you don't have the meter on it? Jeez, Louise!
If you don't have a pressure gauge,
there we go. You don't have a pressure gauge.
Well, the way I generally do it is I will find a pump with a pressure gauge, know what it, put it up to the pressure you want. Uh-huh. A lot of times the easiest thing to do is squeeze the tire. If you do that enough, you get a feel for what it is. If you end up in a position where you don't have an accurate gauge, you can inflate to where you get that same feeling mm-hmm. of resistance. Kind of like, usually it's like squeezing fruit to see if it's ripe or not. Well, it's the same concept. If there's too much, it's past its due.
Yeah.
Same thing here applies to bikes as well.
Yeah.
And because of this, people begin to go, well, why are there these two types? I've got this pump. It doesn't work. I'm going to have to get an adapter. Because you can buy Schrader adapters for Presta valves that fit on the top of a Presta valve that allow you to pump it up like a Schrader valve.
Okay.
But people ask, why is their Presta valve something that is used? Why? Do we have this weird,
why
unique
is
thing
making
to cycle?
My life more difficult?
Well, originally, the Presta valves came about because of where cycling was at the time. Earlier, or 10, 20 years ago in cycling and before, they tried to get narrower and narrower with their rims.
Okay.
They wanted to be as thin as possible to break through the wind. Nowadays, this is no longer true. Nowadays, they found that the wider rims actually provide better stability in wind.
Okay.
And they don't have that. So you'd have a narrow rim. When you drill a hole in a rim, you're actually weakening that rim.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. When it gets real narrow, if that hole gets bigger and bigger for like a Schrader valve, you generate potential fatal weakness in that rim. The Presta valve being a much skinnier valve,
mm-hmm.
you can draw a skinnier hole and maintain more integrity in that rim.
That makes a lot of sense.
That's the big reason the Presta valve came into appeal, was it had to do with having stronger wheels, because the rims used to be much more narrow than they are nowadays.
Okay.
Nowadays, it's not as much. The standards around, which is kind of the problem, is making a transition to Schrader.
Mm-hmm.
But Presta has some other strengths as well. You can get Presta valves in much longer stems than you can Schrader valves.
Yeah, I didn't think of that.
Which is a big problem if you were to have like a deep rim set.
Which triathlon bikes?
A lot of them have. You're going to have a deeper set. The other question, I guess, that comes up is how do they work differently? The Schrader valve has a little trap, like a little spring mechanism, that you have to overcome to inflate and deflate.
Mm-hmm.
When it's depressed, air comes. Anybody who presses the little middle thing knows there's like a little valve, a little spring trap there that you have to do. Now, originally with pumps, it was much harder to pump the Schrader valve than a Presta valve, because the Presta valve doesn't have that. The Presta valve is the air goes in, and it self seals itself based on the pressure from the tire.
Okay.
So if you were actually pumping a Presta valve and you stop pumping and you let go and you hear the psh, that's actually not air leaving the tire, because that's not really what's going on there. It's just the air leaving the pump head. So when you stop pumping a Presta valve, it doesn't lose air.
Because I always think, I should inflate like a little bit higher than I want, because mm-hmm. when I take it off, air's coming out.
No, it's
but
not.
That's not.
That's actually an advantage I see in a Presta valve.
Yeah,
you can
that's
get to your
huge.
Thing,
yeah.
Take it off. Where with a Schrader valve, because
you lose half the air.
The new pumps, because what they did was, since you had that trap, it was very hard to pump things with a Schrader valve.
Mm-hmm.
What they did was they created a mechanism that when you squeeze down on it, it actually depresses that bit.
Right. Yep.
So when you're releasing it, there's that half a fraction between when it finally releases off, so air can escape at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then you fumble around and half your, and then you got to go and do it again because you've lost all the air in your tire.
Potentially lost some of your air.
Yeah.
So with a Presta, you don't lose pressure when you stop pumping, and that's kind of a nice feature of it. The Presta valve is marginally lighter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're counting 1 or 2 grams difference, is a big deal.
Yeah, I can see that.
That's negligible. That's yeah. Completely useless. Yeah. The Presta valves tend to stand up straighter in the rim.
Mm-hmm.
You can get those. The one thing with the Schrader is because the hole's bigger, they can become cockeyed a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see this a lot in Schrader valves where the valve doesn't stick straight up. It's kind of cockeyed.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that is just kind of how big it is and the hole size. It
right.
makes it harder to get it to stand straight up. That's also some of the reason they have like those little screw downs on the Prestas as well to keep it vertical.
Okay.
Makes it easier to pump. You can get into some weird angles that way on the Schrader ones. The other thing that's nice about the Presta is you don't need the cap.
Mm-hmm.
With a Schrader, you have to put a cap in there because if any dirt gets in there, you could potentially lose air.
That's what that stupid cap thing is for.
So you have to use the caps.
That you always lose everywhere.
Yeah, and that's what cars have and everything else. You have to hit the cap on them. The Presta valve doesn't need that cap. A lot of people will put them on there. I've never understood why, because once you screw it down, it's not going to lose air. But you'll see people put their caps on the Presta valves too, which is kind of funny. But you don't need that.
Didn't even know they existed.
Now, the downside to the Presta valve is since you have to unscrew the central rod thing, that rod's real thin and is very fragile.
Mm-hmm.
This is where people will bend them and break them and
that's
pretty
bad.
Much ruin it.
Okay.
This is one of the reasons why I tell people to orient their valve stem facing down rather than up, because when it's facing down from the top of the wheel down and you inflate that way, when you pull off, you're more likely to pull straight down and not bend that.
That's
usually what happens is when people put it on the bottom, they'll pick it up and they won't pull straight up. They'll pull at an angle, and that's why those things bend.
That's bad.
So often.
Okay, I can see that.
Other downsides, you can't use like an automobile pump. The same pumps you have for other devices don't work unless
mm-hmm.
you get an adapter. There's a curve to it. People aren't used to that. You have to unscrew it, inflate it. It's just different than what they're used to. So there's
mm-hmm.
a learning curve there. That is, well, it's not a huge learning curve. There is a learning curve, and people can be confused by it.
I just know I have struggled putting the pump on, excuse me, on the Presta valves before, and it's just like, why? It just, and I don't know why, and somebody else can come along and do it. Yeah, shut up.
The other problem you run into, if you have a wheel that's drilled for Presta, the Schrader valves won't fit in them because the holes are too small.
Mm-hmm.
Where if I have a wheel that has a Schrader valve, in theory, I can run a Presta in it. Now, it doesn't go well inside of it. You almost have to have the screw in those situations, those little screw down one,
mm-hmm.
because the hole is too big for that Presta valve.
Yeah, I can see their wiggle issues.
But at the end of the day, the Presta's slightly lighter. It really, the only advantage I have found from it is the fact that it holds air, and more importantly, it allows you to easily deflate your tire if you need to. If you like over pump it,
mm-hmm.
you can use your finger to control how much air you release into it. That's one of the really downsides to a Schrader is if I have too much air, if I'm out riding, it feels a little too bumpy and I want to take a little air out of it. With a Schrader, it's really hard. You got to use your fingernail and try to get in there and let some air out. But with a Presta, I can just poof, poof, hit it a couple times and the air releases.
Yeah. Makes sense.
To me, that's the real advantage of the Presta valve over the Schrader is just that being able to control your inflation by using your thumb. And the fact that, because the Presta valve, the pump for the Presta head doesn't depress that thing to put air in it.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, you don't lose air pressure.
That's
where the other one does.
That's
and that's really the
know.
Only two things. And first, I think the Presta looks better. I think the Schrader valves look terrible, the little caps on them.
Well, it looks like a little kid's bike.
Well, that's just because all little kid's bikes have that.
Yeah, yeah.
I just don't think they look as good. I think the Presta valve looks cleaner, mainly because they're silver and not black. They don't have that goofy cap on the top of them. I think the caps look bad. Caps look bad on Presta valves. That's just my personal opinion on it. I think the look of the Presta valve is better. That's why I like them
a little more streamlined.
That and I've got the equipment to deal with them. So I'm not like searching for like a conversion piece to like pump them up.
Well, I love my pump. Will do both, and it's got the adapter, so I can do basketballs as well as...
Most pumps nowadays are both.
Yeah, yeah.
They come in about three different types. You've got the one I use the most is dual head.
Mm-hmm. Flip That's it over. That's what I've got, yeah.
I've got one that has one head. You just push it in and clip it down, and depending on what it is,
mm-hmm.
it'll pick up the right one. The other kind I have is you screw it on, because all the valves have like a screw on top of the part. Mm-hmm. I've got a nice one that screws on to the top of both, and it's a reversible mm-hmm. unit where you take the tip of it off, flip it over, screw it back into the pump hose, plug it, and then you screw it down on it,
okay.
You inflate, and then you unscrew it. That's going to be your best bet for maintaining pressure on a Schrader valve. Because one of the things that people like, well, Presta can deal with higher pressure, that's all bogus, because all your shocks, your mountain bike shocks, which have like the rear shocks we can hold 150, 160 PSI, they're all Schrader valves. But they're all screw-on types.
Because
the screw-on is perfect for being able to inflate it. You unscrew it, and it will disengage properly so you don't lose air.
Okay.
So the whole Presta holds more air pressure is kind of a bogus argument in favor of Presta. Because all your really high pressure things are your shocks, and they're all Schrader valves.
Interesting. Huh. Wow. Well, good. I learn something new every day. Yay.
Random things we come across.
Yeah. Well, you know, I just never knew. Never knew why there was a difference. And
people
don't.
That's why I thought it'd make a good topic when I was kind of looking over doing a video on inflating a tire. This would be a good topic for the podcast. Let's talk about Preston Schrader valves, just because people don't have any idea why they're there, what they do, things of that nature. They just know they're there and they use
them. There you go. As long as it works, it's the biggest thing. Well, thanks everybody for listening. And if you're looking for a coach, look us up at go3sport.com, and we will talk to you next week.